This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 120. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, Announcer Bot. Welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics on Facebook. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Hey, Mark.
Yes?
I was cleaning yesterday, and I found a couple issues of comics that we picked up at various conventions over time.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Death Defying Devil number one, a Masquerade number one, a free X-Men. I think we got that at the comic book shop, and an old Wizard magazine. And I just want to get rid of them.
Okay.
If anybody's listening and they want these, email me and let me know your address. The first person who emails me, I will send them to. And if I find anything else lying around that we don't want, I may send it to.
It's our big spring cleaning or fall cleaning or summer cleaning contest.
Right.
I guess.
But you don't have to do anything besides email me.
Right. DCU Legacies, number 4 of 10. Now, the last issue showed us the dawn of the Silver Age, and this issue kind of blew through the rest of the Silver Age. I was actually kind of hoping to get a little more info about how the continuity now works prior to the Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is apparently the next issue. This is kind of strange when DC is really so focused on the Silver Age right now. I mean, they're taking a lot of their beats and a lot of their inspiration from that time. So we get to see the Teen Titans, the Doom Patrol, and the JLA-JSA teaming up. Now, the latter item is a little easier because now they're both on the same Earth. They don't have to get some interdimensional portal or something to join up. It's just the JLA kind of just shows up at the JSA brownstone and says, hi, you want to work together?
Right. So I was kind of curious. There was one section here where the JSA was all encased in, I don't know, plastic or something.
Right.
Was that how they were explaining how they weren't as old as they should be, or
no,
or was that just a short misadventure?
No, that was actually the first time they met.
Uh-huh.
The first real storyline was that the JSA had been trapped by I think it was Vandal Savage.
Yeah,
that's basically the first storyline, but it has nothing to do with what their ages are.
Oh,
they were just temporarily captured.
So it was just a short time that
they
were captured.
Right.
So there's really no explanation for why they're not as old as they should be?
Well, they've...
Or yet, we just haven't seen it yet?
In the last few years, they've intimated that because they interacted with so many magical forces in the Golden Age that somehow this retarded their aging.
Okay. Well, I mean, because isn't the history of all of those JSAers still that they were in World War II?
Right. And that's one of the things I really wish they had explained better in here, and they really don't at all. It's like we suddenly go from the 40s and the Golden Age and then the end of the Golden Age and the beginning of the Silver Age, which is clearly set in like the 60s,
mm-hmm.
the early 60s, and then suddenly it's, you know, boom, and now we're off to the crisis. And a part of that is because it's very, you know, there's really no easy way to explain as you have this fixed point in time, the 1940s and World War II, and as we move farther and farther away from it, it makes less and less sense that there's not some other generation in there in the middle.
Right, yeah.
We also get to see a really great Easy Company story with art by Joe Kubert, who, you know, he'd done the original artwork for Easy Company, and a nice little reunion story for that team.
Mm-hmm.
So considering that there are still six more issues, it little concerns me that they blew through all of this so quickly, because in our timeline, you know, of the timeline of the comic book industry, we've basically made it to 1985 already.
Right. And it just seems like they would have spent a little bit more time on the historical part. Than
right. Because I don't know. Maybe they're going to jump back. I don't know. It just seems like, bam, they just blew through that very quickly.
But it's still a pretty good story.
Oh, I really like the story. I was just a little disappointed. I thought this would be their opportunity to help explain this.
Maybe they can't explain
it. Well, that's the problem. It's very hard to explain. Ex Machina. Now, this is the final issue of Ex Machina from Brian K. Vaughan and Tony Harris. Of course, you know Brian K. Vaughan from Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
And in the last few years, he's also been one of the main writers on the TV series Lost.
Mm.
And Tony Harris, best known, other than for Ex Machina, for his long work on the James Robinson Starman series. So this was always planned to end at issue 50. So they always had a storyline built so that they would end as they planned to do. So if you've not read this, the overall concept is that this guy named Mitchell Hundred, who's a civil engineer, is involved in this strange explosion at the Brooklyn Bridge in 1999, and it's later determined to be an extra-dimensional in nature explosion. And he gets this scar that kind of looks like a circuit board on his face, and he gains the ability to kind of speak to electronic and mechanical devices. So he can tell a gun to jam, or he can tell a cell phone to turn off. So he ends up building this jetpack and some other devices, and he becomes the only superhero in this continuity called the Great Machine. And he saves one of the two trade towers on 9/11 in this continuity. So he then retires as a superhero because he decides he wants to be mayor of New York, and he's elected the mayor of New York. So most of this series has been told in flashbacks, in fact, virtually all of it. And we keep jumping back and forth between pre-9/11 and post-9/11. And there's a lot of politics in here, and there's a lot of really weird stuff in here. Kind of West Wing meets Lost. there's whole issues that are mostly them discussing some political issue, and there's some issues that are like weird bug creatures coming out of another dimension and fighting and all this. So at one point, and I thought this was really a nice meta event, Mayor Hundred interviews Vaughn and Harris to see who's going to write his biography, because he's always been a comic book fan. He wants his biography to be in comic book form. So he interviews them, but he ends up picking Garth Ennis and Jim Lee instead to do it. So in this last issue, and, you know, this has always been a spoilerific podcast, so I'm going to say it. So if you want to skip a minute, if you haven't read the final issue, in the end, he has his first term in office. He doesn't run for a second term.
As mayor.
And he becomes the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. the next year. This is 2005. And he announces there, his last act as mayor is they're going to rebuild the second tower. And he finally ends up as the vice president under John McCain in 2008.
Yeah, that's really weird. But it seems like he did some very non-heroic things the course of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh. One of his at one point best friends and almost like a mentor. This guy named Kremlin, who's always been, you know, why did you stop being a superhero? And, you know, you were doing far better doing that than being a politician. And he's always been trying to force Hundred to become the superhero again. And he says, you know, well, then if you're not going to be a superhero again, I don't want to live in this world. And he puts a gun to his head and threatens Hundred. And Hundred then commands the gun to shoot. And so essentially murders his friend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's it's certainly not a traditional hero story and not even an anti-hero story, really. It's just, it was a very interesting run, and I did really enjoy the title.
So you'd recommend it to somebody who hadn't read it at
all? Yeah, and it's really well suited to the trades. I mean, it really is, you know, it was really written well for the trade format. Now, I picked it up in the original
issues,
but I think you would enjoy it if you read it.
I have to admit, I didn't really read it. Mm-hmm. I read the last issue because mm-hmm. you had me do it.
But right.
Maybe I'll go back and read it. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah. All right, then we move on to Fables. This is number 97. So Red finally gets out of bed. And we hear Red's later history. So she's now an adult, and she and Snow are in the same kingdom.
They're reunited. Snow's the queen or the crown princess.
Yeah, right. And Red is, as they call the title, Dark Age Party Girl. And she does some pretty terrible things, mostly to lash out at Snow, because Snow ended up getting everything they both wanted. They both wanted to be princesses and have a kingdom and a prince. Well, she got all, you know, Snow got all that. Red really didn't get any of that.
Mm-hmm.
So she's doing some pretty terrible things during this time where just to amuse herself, she's getting these various suitors to kill each other and attack dragons and get killed. And
right.
So during all of this, she's been talking to this person who appears to be her mother. And she knows it's not actually her mother. And so who are you really? And she is revealed as, we don't know.
But something that really impressed Rose.
Right. Meanwhile, factions are meeting at the farm. We got to take steps. And so we have Ozma, right?
Yeah.
And
Geppetto and the Badger.
And the Badger.
are meeting to form maybe a coalition to try to take over the farm.
But clearly that's not going to work. And so at the end of the issue, Red is now ready to assume command at the farm. And we're now moving toward issue 100.
Right. The big Fables issue.
Exactly. Finally, we have Superman Earth 1.
Ha!
We got an advanced copy. Want to thank Pat Rack Comics for that.
And we're not going to spoil this.
We're not. No. Because it is an advanced copy. It is from Straczynski and Shane Davis. But we will note that it is a kind of a retelling of the origin story. And the Earth One concept is, it's not the Earth One of the Silver Age. It's just a different continuity. It's not an Elseworlds. It's part of it seems like a vanity project for some of their bigger creators. And this story basically asks the question, if you actually had these powers, what would you do with them? It's a rather cinematic script, I thought, which kind of makes sense because JMS, of course, has done stuff in TV and movies. It is, while note that it is, I think, more realistic artwork.
Although the copy that we had, being an advanced copy, was in all different stages of development.
Right.
So there was artwork from line drawings to black and whites to shaded to color in the same book.
Right. But I mean, the thing I'm thinking about is that Clark looks more like, you know, a regular guy.
Than a superhero.
Right. And one thing I'll note, and this is not a spoiler because this was noted also in the DC Comics podcast for the San Diego Comic-Con, is that Krypton's destruction is a little more sinister than it has previously been.
Or that it was in Earth Prime.
Right. So I am looking forward to seeing the final version in November of this, to see the final artwork and all of that. The color pages that are in there are really impressive.
Yes.
You know, a very nice looking book.
Now, Mark, there's no who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly this week.
Mm.
So I'm going to just take an opportunity to plug the advanced copy that I read this week.
Yeah.
which was How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you haven't read this yet, and I think you're planning on reading
right.
it. It's a memoir about a girl's trip to Israel and some of her preconceived notions and some of what she discovers on her trip to Israel. And I read it along the lines of the same way that I read Persepolis, you know, as a memoir rather than as a comic book
mm-hmm.
per se.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it stood up really well. So I would highly recommend this if you were a fan of say, the Persepolis graphic novel, and that you should look for it when it's coming out in a couple months.
That's great. All right. Well, since there is no who's on the cover, we'll just move straight to telling you that the Facebook fan page is there, and you can search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. You can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed for other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. And if you would like those couple comic books and maybe something else, email me there. And you can call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.